Hello, my name is Woody. Thank you for listening to Change in the House of Pods, a podcast about Deftones. I had a wonderful conversation with Derek Madden that I'm delighted to share with you today. Derek is my boss at 93X here in Minneapolis, our program director. But more than that, he's somebody I respect and admire. And he's got a little game, too. Really, not a bad basketball player at all. He's got some handle. He can knock down the open shot. Actually, he's got some post-up game, which you wouldn't expect to look at him. I'm not brown-nosing here at all, either. He's not going to listen to this. He's just excited I'm doing some extra shit for work. So I'm being truthful. Derek's been a DJ probably most of his life. In Atlanta, San Francisco, L.A., he is a big swinging dick at Cumulus. Honestly, when I asked him what I should include in his credentials, that's what I told him I got so far, that he's a big swinging dick at Cumulus. And he said, that sounds pretty good. He's also the co-host of the Toy Department podcast. And look, if you've ever been interested in how Deftones function in popular culture, I think you'll pick up on a number of things in this conversation. Derek is somebody that makes decisions about what you hear on the radio. That's not to suggest that he's responsible for what's successful and what's not, but he spends a lot of time evaluating the information that puts quote-unquote success in context. And that's why I was excited to talk to him about Deftones. I mean, listen to this. So what do you think about Ohms? What's your impression on Ohms?
The song, I think, is really great. And it sounds great on the radio so far. You know, it's weird because when you have a record, all you really have is a single. You know, for me, I'm really kind of judging it from the point of how does it work as a single. And, you know, time is going to tell. We've had it for, a few days now.
Right.
But it feels great. And as a programmer for a station like ours, I love having bands that are unapologetically rock, not afraid to be loud, but also really trying to make art and do something that is cool and interesting and challenging. And those are the bands, like, I can't get enough of those bands. Those are the bands that I want to, like, give the benefit of the doubt to, because it's really easy for rock to be comfort food for people. And I love comfort food. You know what I mean? Like, I got a pizza in the kitchen that I'm going to start chowing down on when we're done here. Like, no shade to comfort food, but if we're going to continue to have rock and rock is going to continue to mean something to people for generations, then we do need more records that are pushing the genre forward and continuing to try and make new things that we hope people will want to listen to 20 years from now.
And that's insightful, right? Also, Derek's my guy. We used to talk like this every day before the pandemic. Now, not so much. But I mean, listen to this.
If Chino rapped again, would it be the end of the world? Would it ruin their reputation?
We had some fun, man. But before we start our chat, this is the first show since Ohms came out. And holy shit, it's monumental. I'm going to tell you my 10 favorite things about Ohms at the end of this podcast. It'll be several episodes before I get to talk about the new album with a guest, so I'm going to do it today. What the hell? Amazing. So without further ado, my conversation with Derek Madden. Thank you for listening to Change in the House of Pods.
Let's start with radio. Do you remember the first time you played Deftones on the radio?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I remember the first moment that I played Deftones on the radio, but I definitely remember the time and the way things were. I got introduced to Deftones because they were on Maverick Records back in the day. And I don't know if you remember Maverick at all, but that Maverick was Madonna's vanity label.
Yeah.
And then she signed like Alanis Morissette.
I don't remember Alanis being on Maverick. That's cool.
Yeah. That first Jagged Little Pill record came out on Maverick and kind of like sort of made the label. So they had some cash to spend and they started trying to go out and find, interesting bands. And the Deftones, I think, was the first. They had Candlebox, I want to say, but the Deftones was like the first hard rock band that they had.
So they were beneficiaries of Alanis's like success in some ways.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Alanis's. I think that first Alanis record sold like 16 million or something like that.
Oh, it was huge. It was.
Yeah, that was, you know, back when records really sold, right? Yeah. You know, like that's all there was.
Yeah.
Napster. This is slightly pre-Napster. You know what I mean? So, White Pony was the record that really had all the buzz. Like around the fur you know, got some radio play, but they were really trying to get White Pony at alternative radio. And I had a pretty good relationship with our Maverick person, so I'd been hearing about him for a long time. And we had this dude, he's still in the business, who was like our local guy. And he was just, he was like a huge Motley Crue fan, and he loved to party. This dude, his name was Steve Grabornis, I believe is how you say his real name, but everybody called him G-Bong. And for months,
that's a great
G-Bong would talk about, dude, you got to hear this band, man. The Tones, man. Unbelievable. Check out the Tones. Yeah. So I had been introduced to this this band, the Tones, and I knew it was going to kind of be a big deal. And, you know, Change was the single. It was probably their biggest single at radio. So, you know, that was a moment where, you know, stuff was really working for them. And, you know, that was probably the peak point of that sound too, where really hard rock was super commercially viable. So it was just a good time. And, you know, it was a good time for them to make this sort of like classic record, you know, that I think did a lot to expand what people thought that movement could be. You know, and I'm not, no shade on any of those other bands, but White Pony's a different record from, you know, what Limp Bizkit or Korn were doing around that, or certainly like a Kid Rock, you know what I mean? So, so that was sort of the setup. And I know a lot of guys, you know, I probably should try to find a way to get them on this podcast. You actually probably have some really good
That'd be super
stories, because they spent a lot of time. I think G-Bong would have a few good ones. I know that he and my sister had some nights hanging out with the Deftones when they went through Detroit back in the day. So,
oh, word. Where were you?
Those are just the stories that I know about.
Where were you?
I was in Lexington, Kentucky.
Word.
At the particular time, yeah.
So, and this was like 99.
This would have been like 2000, 99, 2000, yeah.
So what was your initial like reaction with Change? Did you like go, oh my God, this is super cool and we need to play it right away, or we're going to play this, it's another new song that we're going to get into? Like, at what point did you sort of go, wow, this might be for me?
Yeah, I was pretty in. I mean, honestly, for me, change was easy. And then it was Digital Bath. I think that was really the song that always got me. It's still my favorite Deftones song. So once I heard that, I kind of knew that these dudes were going to be for real, you know?
Yeah.
And that they were going to be with us for a while. So,
what is it about Change to you that makes it a successful radio song?
I mean, I think it's got one of the, like, most, if you're just talking about a song, you know, what makes a radio song a lot of times is that hook, right? And I think Change is one of their best, like, if you're just looking for, like, a straight-up classic, I can define this song in 15 seconds kind of hook, like, that the hook for Change is just awesome. And it's so melodic and heavy, and it's, you know, it's sort of like creeps along with that almost like horror vibe in the beginning, and then has that explosion, and it's just a great song. And I feel like to me that was the most their commercial sort of peak, in that it was where all that stuff sort of coalesced into the most easily sort of packageable version of Deftones, if that makes sense. Yeah. I don't know if it's their best song, but it's like sort of the purest distillation of that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and especially it being like at that time, like the time for sure played to their advantage. You know, 10 years later, a lot of people argue that Diamond Eyes, well, some people argue that Diamond Eyes is an even better record. A lot of people love You've Seen the Butcher. Like, that's a song they still always play. Like, that sort of stuff continued to come out for them. But it was something about 2000 that really cemented Change and has given them a lifetime on radio, right? Like,
yeah. Well, you know, I think, you know, one of the things that I always try to tell people about radio and hits and, you know, commercial music is like, it's like romance, you know what I mean? Like, you know, you can date somebody, and if the chemistry is right but the timing's wrong, it's still not going to work. Right. We've all had that person in our lives. Right. And sometimes the timing's right. Like you meet somebody really at the right time, but the chemistry isn't all there. Horrible, and it's the same thing. And hit records are sort of like that too. You know what I mean? Like I've seen so many great records that just came at the wrong time, too early or too late. And it didn't work out for them, which didn't mean the record wasn't great, but it was just the timing wasn't there. And so I think, you know, if you're looking at that song versus maybe other songs in the Deftones catalog, you can't ignore the timing, because I do think the world was really open to the commercial viability of heavy music in a way that it might not be right now.
I love hearing people who like understand what music does in context, like in the world, how they describe songs. So now I'm going to ask you to describe Digital Bath. Like, give that the context for me. That's, I mean, because I know you have, like, it's pulling at your heartstrings already. So now, like, what does Digital Bath do then?
Well, Digital Bath, like, almost like Spinal Tap. Like, it goes to 11, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it does.
Like that chorus just flies, you know? And so, like, you know, when you're with Chino, and it's just not impossible to just yelp along with him in that song, you know what I mean? Like,
no doubt.
It just fucking soars, you know? And it's really, like, to me, the way that song starts with that sort of groove, that real slow sort of groove.
It's almost like a hip-hop little bop to it, right?
Totally. But you know it's just gearing up to take off. And like, you know, yeah, soaring is definitely the way that I would put that. That's why I think it's my favorite song from them.
And the perfect crescendo, I think, in that song. Like that, when that song reaches its absolute peak, it's like the best. Like it pays off what it's been building up for. When it finally gets there, it's like, release. You know what I mean?
Yep. Release, yes, that's another good way to put it.
I love the story behind that song too, with like Chino or the band like being in Hollywood, and then Chino like finishing the song and then immediately taking it out in like a Corvette or a convertible or something like that, and like driving around blasting it, thinking like, man, we just made this futuristic song. Like I think that's so cool, like that they realized that they had created something that was like really great, you know what I mean? And then for it to resonate for 20 years now, it's pretty incredible, right? So they probably didn't make it to, where did you say you were in Kentucky?
Lexington.
Did they make it to Kentucky on the White Pony Tour?
I don't believe that they did, no. You know, search my memory for that. Now, I've definitely seen Deftones several times since, but I don't think I saw them in Lexington on the White Pony Tour. You know, I was lucky enough that they would send me places to go see bands, you know what I mean? I want to say maybe I went to Cincinnati or something like that. It was like an hour away or something like that. So,
yeah,
you know, not that it was too exotic or anything. But I have actually introduced the Deftones on stage.
Yeah.
At a show before. Yeah. So,
tell me about it. It
was definitely a thrill. So we, a little later on, I started working at the station in San Francisco. That was kind of like the next stop. And we had them for our BFD, which was like, you know, the X Fest of San Francisco. In fact, I think they're still doing BFD. Out at the Shoreline, which is like that 20,000 seat amphitheater. So for me, it was one of the first times that I'd been on the main stage at that amphitheater, where it's like you're getting like the floodlights in your face. But it's fun when you're up there in an arena setting, particularly when you're going to introduce the heavy band on the bill, you know?
Yeah.
Because you know you got people in your corner who are going to be psyched, right?
Yeah, so no it's doubt. Like, yeah.
So for me, it was just real easy to be like, you know, are you guys ready to get heavy? You know, like, just bring out your inner James Hetfield, and people are going to cheer, which was awesome. At that show, my man, the late T. Chang, handed me a joint backstage, which I probably shouldn't have had because I got so high and then had to go do work.
I can relate.
You know, Chase offered me a joint. What am I going to do? I'm going to smoke the joint, right? I'm going to have a little pull. And I was not prepared.
It was some bomb, huh? It was bomb.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. So, yeah. So hopefully, I don't remember all of that after that, but hopefully it was pretty good.
Let me ask you this. Have you gone through any of the other albums? Have you given the other ones the same sort of attention that you gave to White Pony, or is White Pony sort of singular for you?
I've listened to every album they've done. I just like White Pony a lot. So yeah. I don't know that I've listened to any record as many times as White Pony, but every time that's, you know, to me, they're a band that every time they're going to put out a record, I want to see what's up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're always capable of making something that we'll be talking about 20 years from now. Right. So
man,
you want to know, you know,
it's really curious to me how they continue to be classified and placed in different genres, with nu metal being the obvious starting point. But I read something recently when they were talking, somebody was writing up about Ohms, and it was, they called them an art metal band. And I was like, shit, are they art metal now? Maybe I think they are. I think maybe they are art metal. Have you ever, if you were going to give it a name or put it in a box, would you roll with art metal, or is there something better, something I'm missing?
I think art metal is a good word. I mean, I think they get some of the same tags that a Tool will get. You know, you get that sort of thinking man's metal, right? You know, people like to throw that at them. I think both of those are better than nu metal, right? You know what I mean? That tag never totally seemed to to fit. I feel like art metal is a decent summation of what they're trying to do, right?
Yeah.
What do you think? Yeah.
I think so. I think they're definitely trying to create albums. It's cool that they really try to craft, I think, complete bodies of work that are different and separate from what they've done previously, which is certainly not easy to put in one box, but they do play heavy music, and I think going art metal is cool. It's probably better than anything that I would have come up with. I would have probably just said rock band. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
But it's interesting to me either way that a rock band or an art metal band can be the headlining band at a huge festival, when really back in the nu metal era, when they fit squarely in one box to some large percentage of people, they were the third or fourth band mentioned, right? It was Limp Bizkit, probably Linkin Park, Papa Roach. Oh, and Deftones.
Kid Rock, even, maybe. You know
even
what I mean?
Kid Rock, right? Even Man. Kid Rock. So what happened? How did that happen? How did they manage to pull that off? You know what I mean?
I think it comes down to the story you were telling a minute ago about them and the Corvette after. They made a record that if it came out tomorrow, right? You wouldn't really blink, where, a lot of those other bands made a record that was maybe more for the moment and did some things that were a little trend chasey. You know what I mean? There were a lot of DJs up on stage in that band. Some of them may not even really have been playing anything. You know what I mean? right? Oh, so
big facts.
Right? And the Deftones were just sort of doing their thing. And, you know, maybe that thing was a little headier. And maybe that's, you know, sort of set up for the world to kind of come to later. You know, time is a funny thing. With music and I had this conversation with a friend of mine that I used to do a podcast with, and we were talking about the Smiths and the Cure and REM, some bands that Chino loves, by the way. Mm-hmm. And how much bigger the Smiths legacy has gotten since the 80s. They were definitely the least popular of those three bands, right, when they were out. Sure. You know what I mean? And they're probably the most popular of those three bands today. Whereas REM, who I love, and signed a massive record contract, and at one point, you know, we're playing arenas and we're mentoring Tom York and Kurt Cobain.
The biggest band
in the world. You don't get there was definitely a time where you made the case that they were the biggest band in the world. Yeah. You barely hear them now, right? And I don't know why that is, why time sort of diminished their output, you know, where it grew the Smiths. And I feel like the Cure sort of stayed steady. Yeah. You know what I mean? And maybe it's maybe it has a little bit of something to do with sort of the cult or the fan bases of those bands and sort of the obsessiveness. And I do think that, you know, Deftones is a band that a fan base can be obsessive about in a way that exactly yeah. right in a way Dudes that you're not going to feel about the Kid Rock catalog. You know what I mean?
Nope.
You
won't be seeing a podcast about Kid Rock out of me.
Ted Nugent hosts that podcast.
Although I will freely admit, when I went to Europe after college, I went with a couple of buddies, and I would be caught on several occasions yelling, screaming at the top of my lungs, "My name is Kid," in the canals of Venice, Italy. Like, I was super
just to hear it reverberate.
Like, it was so dope. Even in Rome, God, my buddies really hated that.
Yeah. And now, did you call yourself the bull god?
I did not call myself. I definitely knew some Joe C raps, though. I knew so many Joe C raps.
That was still like the Cowboy Troy days, too, wasn't it? Man, I'm going off on a tangent. I need to, like...
You know what, though? But actually, I'm glad that we brought it here, because I often lament the absence of rap. Like, I'm one of those dudes. Like, I didn't hate all of, like, new... Like, Cold Chamber was not my favorite band or whatever, but I did enjoy Limp Bizkit's output. I still think they're a fantastic, fun live band to see. Linkin Park, obviously, so great. So, like, I love rap music. Like, I love hip-hop music. And knowing that Chino, to me, like, at that time, was my favorite, and then, like, just walked away. Just basically, like what's the dude that plays for the Colts?
Andrew Luck.
Andrew Luck. He was just like, you know what? I made my money with this, and I'm going to walk away. We got to do something different, and I got to walk away. My question is, if Chino rapped again, would it be the end of the world? Would it ruin their reputation? Completely selfish question, I realize.
I feel like that's a hard thing to pick back up. You know what I mean? Like, once you walk away, you kind of walked away. You know what I mean?
I mean, you could say it's a young man's game, but Jay-Z's how old? Like,
that's true. That's true.
I was listening to Chino on a podcast talk about how he, like, rapped under the bleachers, like he would battle rap in high school because he always just had that confidence. And to me, it was the dude was a great rapper. So I'm just, I don't know. I miss it. That's all. I miss it. I was hoping that you would say, nah, dude, he could totally rap again and pull it off.
He could totally. You should ask him. I'm sure you're going to get a chance to talk to him with his record cycle. We're gonna figure out a way to make this happen. Ask him if it'll bust out a verse for you.
He would probably end the conversation right there.
And I would just be like, come on, man. I'll drop a beat for you. Let's see what you can.
Start busting grinding out on the tabletop. Be like high school all over again.
I would love that.
I hope not. I really hope I don't do that. So what do you think about Ohms? What's your impression on Ohms?
The song I think is really great. And it sounds great on the radio so far. You know, it's weird because when you have a record, all you really have is a single. You know, for me, I'm really kind of judging it from the point of how does it work as a single. And, you know, time is going to tell. We've had it for, what, a few days now.
Right.
But it feels great. And as a programmer for a station like ours, I love having bands that are unapologetically rock, not afraid to be loud, but also really trying to make art and do something that is cool and interesting and challenging. And those are the bands, like, I can't get enough of those bands. Those are the bands that I want to, like, give the benefit of the doubt to, because it's really easy for rock to be comfort food for people. And I love comfort food. You know what I mean? Like, I got a pizza in the kitchen that I'm going to start chowing down on when we're done here. Like, no shade of comfort food, but if we're going to continue to have rock, and rock is going to continue to mean something to people for generations, then we do need more records that are pushing the genre forward and continuing to try and make new things that we hope people will want to listen to 20 years from now. Otherwise, we might as well just pack in and just play Guns N' Roses all day. You know what I mean? So,
Which is not the worst thing in the world.
Thank God. Yeah, not the worst thing in the world. Again, no shady Guns N' Roses. Yeah.
Got some pizza in the fridge.
Right. But you know what I mean? Like, there's a difference. Like, we're not, you know, we're not a classic rock station. We're not trying to be a classic rock station. So it's, you know, I like rock that exists for now. And records that are made for people who are living today and have something to say about today and these weird, crazy times that we're in.
Yeah.
So I hope that, you know, that Ohms will be that. And, you know, I haven't heard anything but the song, but I have confidence.
Yeah. Yeah. They've never let me down. They've rarely ever disappointed at all. But what do you think about that, dropping an album in these crazy times? Like I've talked about it with artists a couple of times, but like you're giving people the music. Like what are they doing? It's kind of crazy, right?
It is a risk for bands. You know what I mean? Because financially, at least, because they're also dependent on touring.
Yeah.
And that's not available to them in this moment. Like, to me, it makes more sense to, if you're Taylor Swift and you make this quiet acoustic record that they're never going to have to play live for people. Like, that's the kind of record that you put out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
No, but I think there are enough bands now that are starting to say, like, we're starting to see album drops again. And I think there are bands that are sort of hopeful that, you know, hey, we can get these songs to people and give them get people a chance. They're everybody stuck at home and give them a listen. And, you know, in 2021, when we go back out on the road again, people will know them.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, like I do think there is a sense of, you know, people are home and captive and looking for stuff to entertain them. We started to run out of stuff on TV.
No doubt.
You know, the day we're taping this, there may not be sports for a little bit. So, So, you know, people I do think are looking for stuff. I also find, though, at least with the records that have come out in this pandemic, people do tend to churn through them. Like, there'll be a record that kind of captures conversation for a week or two, and then people move on to the next thing. And it's like, you know, 4 months later, you'd be like, hey, you remember Green Day put a record out? You know what I mean? Like, yeah. You know, stuff like that. So,
does that put the demand on the artist then to like continue to like, should Deftones be writing right now?
I mean, I think everybody should be writing right now. Why not? You know what I mean? What else you got to do?
Yeah.
You know, make great songs, and hopefully we'll have a glut of great music to throw at the world. You know, in another 6 to 8 months, particularly as bands do start to get out. Because I think that, you know, bands will be able to play Europe next year at a minimum, I think. So,
no doubt. Yeah. And it's not like they haven't gone stretches of, any band goes stretches of time without hitting certain geographic areas because they're somewhere else.
Right.
That's just how it goes. You can only make money in so many places at so many times, I guess. Like, it to be a viable, income earning, profitable band.
Yeah, and Deftones have been, right? They've been about a every 3-4 years kind of band, right? It seems like.
Well, I was looking at their touring cycle and just doing my research for myself and sort of refreshing what was going on and like how many times have I seen the band and trying to really catalog like what I've touched and what I've missed out on. And they didn't do a tour here for Koi no Yokan, which was a bummer. It was like a 3 or 4 year lap. So I'm sure that happens everywhere else, but prior to that, I mean, they were here like all the time. They gave Minneapolis a lot of love, like a lot of love. They did a promotion. I'm going to continue to talk about this until, well, you know, Joe Falkowski, right?
The
beer guy. So there was a 93X promotion in like 96 where they played in that McDonald's parking lot in Dinkytown. And apparently Joe filmed that concert, that show, and I suspect that his grainy footage is the one that circulates now and exists and lives on to this day on YouTube and has been seen. And I think, in my idea, has been story. So that might actually ultimately become the overarching like storyline of this podcast, is discovering what happened in 96, because to me that's an amazing, like, to think about seeing Deftones in that McDonald's parking lot. It's like unfathomable to me, right?
What was they just build a stage there? Do they play like in the back of a flatbed truck or something?
I don't know. Admittedly, it's been a little while since I've watched the footage, but I think they were on a stage, and I think, you know, it's sort of got a wall behind, like between the parking lot and the street. So I sort of think that they
for those of you who have not been to this McDonald's, it does have an ample parking lot.
It does have a lot of parking lot.
And it's right next to a liquor store, which was probably good for anyone who was attending said concert in the parking lot.
Son of a bitch to make a left turn into, though. It's the worst.
Yes.
You can't make a right turn, piece of cake, no problem. pedestrian troubles, though, everywhere.
I've wound up at that McDonald's in some desperate times, for sure.
We all have. As a former student at the University of Minnesota, we all have.
It's so, one of the 24-hour bad boys, you know. Sometimes you just got to eat something.
Well, and now they have, like, DoorDash and stuff, and it's like, man, Mickey D's. Mickey D's about to drop some spicy McNuggets. I don't know if you heard about that. That's a little show.
I did hear about that, yes. Yes,
big
yes.
deal, right? Okay, so we talked about bands should be making music, but Deftones are actually, they are making music right now, right? So they're dropping the Black Stallion, the remix album of White Pony.
You're bringing some news to me, I feel like, right now.
Am I? Yeah, that's so, like, well, I was curious because... nine times out of ten, like, remix albums suck, but a Deftones remix album I'm kind of interested in. Your thoughts?
My thoughts are, it always, the remix album always depends on who are they collaborating with.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
remixes are
DJ Shadow, or I can't remember. I honestly can't remember it.
So there's so much in the hands of the guy who is producing. I'll give a hat tip to a remix album that I like. Foles just did a remix album that I think is pretty good. But again, it depends on, you know, who the people that you're working with. Because a lot of times, like, the song that you like on the record may not be the remix you like. The remix is like a total reconstruction.
Isn't that weird? But it's still like the same song, and it still has some of those appeals that, like whether it's lyrical or whatever the signature moments of a song, they still always end up in a remix somehow that you're like, oh, yeah. Unless maybe if they don't, that's what sucks about it.
Has Chino ever done the, like, I'm going to sing the hook on an EDM song? Because I actually think that could really work, now that I think about it.
You know, I don't know about an EDM. I know he did. He's done some different, like, guest vocals on, like, everything from, like, Handsome Boy Modeling School. He'll do, like, everything. My understanding is if you send him something, odds are he'll send you something back. But what is it going to be? Or that he gets sent, I don't know. I don't know if anybody from the EDM world has ever sent anything to him.
Yeah, well, there you go. Free idea for you, Marshmallow.
Yeah. You're welcome. Thanks for listening. Okay, in talking about Chino, he said before that he only tweets out links to YouTube links to songs because he thinks that the best thing that fans could get is like a recommendation from their favorite artists. Like, that's the best thing that he could offer. So in that spirit, I would love for you to make three recommendations, anything at all. A song, an artist, a writer, a book, a photograph, a movie, a TV series, whatever. Three recommendations, whatever you like.
Oh, wow. Okay. In all the world. Now, are these...
whatever you like. Old, new, anything at all.
Just a, hey, man, check this shit out. I think you'll like it.
That's it.
Okay. Wow. All right. I'm going to start with I May Destroy You, which is a television show that just finished. The final episode aired on HBO on Monday. And it's the vision of this woman named Michaela Cole, who's a British actor. She's been in some Black Mirrors and a show called Chewing Gum and a couple other things that maybe people might have seen. She's got sort of a very distinctive face. And she wrote this thing that's about, like, her experiences in London and friendships. And then there's this sort of sexual assault, like, throughway that goes through this, and now it sounds like I've made it really depressing and weird, and at times it is those things, but at times it's also really fun and funny and joyous and, like, And it's 100% cool all the time. Like, it's a really, just really interesting, well-made, unique show. That the kind of thing that you just don't, I don't know. There's not much on television.
Where like do I find it?
HBO. Where? So if you got HBO Max or HBO Go or whatever, the whole thing's up now.
I May Destroy You. Sounds like a metal band. Definitely sounds like the name of the metal band. Or at the very least, a metal song.
There are some metal attitudes in the show, I would say. Yeah, it's not a very metal show. There's not a lot of actual metal, but you know, it's definitely a ball breaker, and I would say, and pretty kind of cool and innovative. So I'll throw that out there.
All right.
I'm going to throw out if we have any more of them, the NBA playoffs. That's been the main focus of my life, and it's been, I mean, you know, what Luka did the other day was incredible, and we're kind of now just getting to the good parts. So, you know, people start the smelling the chip.
You're excited.
I'm happy. I'm genuinely happy about it, and I'm curious to see where it goes. It's just not hard to get where these guys are coming from. They all went into this bubble thinking that this was the best thing to do to help. And I think it's completely reasonable for them to reconsider that, based on just the events, on what's going on in the world right now.
Yeah.
You know, and as we record this, you know, this is the day that the first strike is probably a better word than boycott.
Yeah. I think you're right.
Went down, but there's already been a lot of indications that it's spreading to a lot of other sports. So without knowing the extent of that, I think that's sort of a cool and vibrant moment. So I'll throw that out there.
Let me ask you a quick follow-up question about that, because I've been talking about it as you have, I'm sure, with plenty of people. Do the players lose the ability to affect change if they leave the bubble?
Yeah, I think that's a question that everybody, including the players, are kind of trying to debate and figure out. Like, I would have thought it would be cool if Milwaukee had come out and given a press conference and then left rather than just not coming out at all, you know, because you take the mic when you have it.
Yeah.
I think players have been good the last couple of nights, you know, when they get to the post-game interview, saying the thing that they want to say before they answer questions about basketball. Mm-hmm. Which I think is good. And I don't know. You're right. You don't necessarily know how something's going to be perceived, you know, once they leave and it's kind of – and things are stuck, and then people start to get resentful about not having their entertainment or whatever. But I think one of the things that we've seen is, like, you know, with any kind of social unrest – you're fighting a long game in terms of winning hearts and minds. And I don't know that you can necessarily worry about an individual action and whether people are going to be for it or against it. You know, because in the moment they may be guided by their feelings or their tribe or their whatever.
Truly.
And a lot of times it sort of takes a long view, you know, to look at it. And you know, you look at the arc of Colin Kaepernick, and it's kind of the same thing, right?
Like, no doubt. Absolutely.
The way people took that, you know,
a long time for a lot of people to come around.
Right. And some of that has really shifted. And through nothing that Colin Kaepernick did, it was all in the wind after he did what he was doing, right? So, I think you just got to do what you feel is right.
Yeah,
you know,
it certainly felt like they were acting from their feelings today, seeing as how Orlando was about to take the court and didn't even know Milwaukee was. I feel like Milwaukee was probably trying to decide what they were going to do up until game time. And if that's the case and they were acting, you know, based on their feelings, I'm not saying that their feelings were wrong, but they should realize that they captured the eyeballs of the world. And if they continue to set the expectation, in my mind, that games will be played, given, you know, maybe they're like it. What I've been saying is they should hold the game hostage basically until some cops get arrested or until they can affect the change that they decide or stipulate or whatever it is that they're looking for. I don't know what they could get though. Like, I also don't know what tangible thing that they could It's so.
It is, yeah. But I was, I was pleased to see that they got the Attorney General and Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin on the phone today.
Oh, did they really?
Yeah, from the locker room. So, you know.
See, that's real. That's real.
Whatever they had to say about they got to say to people who had some power in the situation. So
I hope I hope they stay after, because they do. It does feel like they have attention. They have everybody's attention, and we're talking about it. You know what I mean? It's there's a sense of urgency, and I think that's great. I think that's
yeah.
That's,
you know, and of course, it's not just up to them. Obviously,
of
you know what I mean?
Not. Like, no, it's certainly right? not on their shoulders, and I don't mean to imply that by any means. It's on my shoulders more than it is on them. So, all right, your third recommendation.
Man, all right. So now I had it all in my head.
Sorry, I took it totally off track. Yeah. I have that tendency. This podcast is going to include a lot of tangents. There's going to be a lot of tangents.
All right, let me give you I'm gonna jump into let's see, some stuff that I've been listening to lately.
Right.
I mean, you know, look, the Dirty Nil have some new stuff out. You know, that's a band that we're both fans Super. Of. There's a British singer named Arlo Parks.
I've heard that name before. I have not checked out that person's music though.
Who I really like. And the new single from London Grammar, I think, is super cool. None of these are like super 93X kind of things.
That's okay.
If you're looking for a rock band, we're playing a band called Cleopatra right now that I find to be pretty exciting.
Did you know I played them on Wood Joints like 2 years ago? Like that song.
Home. Yeah.
Like I've been super excited about that. Those guys, I'm glad to see that they're making a little break. It's super exciting.
I saw those guys open up for Highly Suspect at Lollapalooza probably right around that time that you were playing them. And I was like, oh, this could be a thing. And it took them 2 years to get signed, you know? And that's kind of what, going back to what we were talking about before, you know, timing.
Yeah.
Sometimes, right? Some, you know, it wasn't like that's only getting any better in 2 years. But, you know, maybe the world was just ready to hear it. Or maybe they needed 2 years to figure out the method of distribution to get it to people, you know. So, let me throw one more out there too, because I'm going to give you a whole album. The new Glass Animals record slaps. It's really good, awesome. Front to back. So, yeah, check that out too.
My sincerest and most heartfelt thanks to Derek for being a guest on the Change Pod. He's one of the smartest people I know, and I am extremely grateful for his insight. And I knew he'd smoked with Chi before, but this was actually the first time I'd heard that story. That was pretty dope. Both he and Pablo had some cool things to say about Chi. Man, I'm so grateful to hear those firsthand accounts. You know what I mean? And my next guest, next week, Joe Falkowski, has a really cool story to tell about interacting with the band. And in it, he describes Chi meditating after a show, which was cool as hell to think about. I'm super excited to share that conversation. Joe actually came up in this chat with Derek, and it turns out he did not record that show in the McDonald's parking lot in 96 or 97, but he was there, and he got his hands on a copy of that tape from the guy who did record it. Joe apparently taped a lot of shows back in the day. Our chat next week is going to be really, really cool. He saw Deftones open for Anthrax on their first visit to Minneapolis. Good stuff, man. Really good stuff. Okay, let's talk about Ohms, because it's incredible, and I can't wait another minute to tell you how much I love it. 10 things I love about Ohms. There are 10 tracks, so I have tried to succinctly describe what it is I love about each one. Here we go. Genesis. Wow, what an intro. Fucking slaps, synthy, heavy, groovy, dope riff. Amazing way to start an album. Ceremony. The hook. The ooze. Lyrically, though, this is as good as Deftones have ever been. I'm leaving you tonight. It's not fun here anymore. Shit. And the ooze. Did I mention the ooze? Probably as sticky of an earworm as they've got. Period. Urantia. Let's dance. What a cool song. A metal riff for a dance song. And sexy as fuck. Amazing. Error. Still dancing. But the last minute of this song, so bright and triumphant. It's like a kaleidoscope of sound. Already one of my favorite minutes in music. Like, period. The Spell of Mathematics. God-level songwriting. And the vibe, that vibe out, it just puts me over. What are those, claps? Snaps? How many Deftones songs vibe out like that? Zero, except for this one. Pompeii, so pretty. Maybe the prettiest they've ever been. And then Jesus Christ, brutal. And the fucking seagulls, the ooze. How high am I right now? And the lyrics, we drink from the fountain of intent. Chino said recently that being the singer sucks sometimes because it's so easy to fuck up a song, but here he is, elevating. And then at the 340 mark, the song stops and turns into this cinematic soundscape. It reminds me of the score to the first Terminator movie with this synth dirge that just incredible. And then that bleeds into This Link Is Dead. Let's fucking dance. This is Blade Runner right here. This is what I want from Deftones. And they're just fucking giving it up. And lyrically, again, I have no patience now for expectations. Wow. Just sublime, man. Just sublime. Radiant City. This shit just knocks. That bop, the soft, heavy contrast Deftones so widely known for. And it's so triumphant. It's like leather and lace, but more like paisley and just fucking dope. Nobody does this shit but Deftones. Nobody. And then Headless. Sexy as hell. Again, that fucking bop and the strut that they fucking roll off into the sunset with Ohms. Fists in the air. I love everything about this album. Make no mistake, this is an album, a full collection of songs. And if you aren't into the experience of an album, like if you don't care enough about music to enjoy the journey of a collection of songs, you're just not ready for Ohms. I mean, of course it's got songs, but this shit is a whole ass album. It's so complete. This is Deftones fully realized. And like White Pony in 2000 and Diamond Eyes in 2010, I am absolutely confident we'll be looking back 10 or 20 years from now talking about how great this album is and continues to be. Thank you for listening to Ohms. Thank you for listening to Deftones. Thank you for listening to Change in the House of Pods. My name is Woody. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Woodbruh. That's W-O-O-D-B-R-U-H. If you want to connect with me, talk about the show. Otherwise, get back to listening to Ohms, man. We'll talk again next week.